New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to another full-length episode of The True Crime Never Sleeps. Today, we're diving into one of Finland's darkest and most enduring mysteries, the Lake Bottom Murders. And please, before we get into today's topic, don't forget to subscribe to our channel and hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And with that, let's dive into today's topic. Picture Finland for a moment. What comes to mind? For most people, it's probably vast forests, shimmering lakes, and postcard-perfect natural beauty. Finland is one of those places that seems almost too peaceful to be real. The kind of place where you'd imagine people spend their days cross-country skiing under crisp blue skies, or fishing in pristine waters while gazing at the northern lights. And honestly, that's not far off. Finland is an outdoor lover's dream, with its rugged landscapes and endless opportunities for hiking, camping, fishing, and hunting. The kind of place where you could lose yourself in nature, disconnect from the world, and just breathe. But for all its charm and tranquility, Finland also hides its share of darkness. We're about to see even the most beautiful places can become the setting for unthinkable horrors. The Lake Bottom Murders are a grim reminder of just how quickly a peaceful retreat into nature can spiral into a nightmare. When I think of Northern Europe, I usually think of safety and order. Countries like Finland seem to have it all figured out. Clean streets, happy people, and an overall sense of calm. Sure, it's dark for a good chunk of the year, and it's not exactly cheap, but you never think of it as dangerous. And yet, today's story flips that perception on its head. Lake Bottom, nestled near the southern tip of Finland, just a short drive from Helsinki, one of those places that looks like it belongs on a travel brochure. But in 1960, it became the site of a crime so brutal and bizarre that it still haunts the nation to this day. What should have been a quiet camping trip turned into a blood-soaked tragedy that left investigators and the public grasping for answers. Let's rewind to June 4, 1960. It's a sunny Saturday morning in southern Finland, and a group of four teenagers preparing for a weekend camping trip. The group consists of two couples, Veila Björklund and her boyfriend Niels Gustafsson, along with their friends Anja Maki and Seppo Boisman. And let me pause here to apologize in advance for any Finnish names I'm about to butcher. I promise I'm trying my best, but as someone who doesn't speak Finnish, this is going to be a challenge. Even the name Bottom took me a second guessing myself, but I'll do my best to stick the landing. Veila and Anja were both 15 years old, while Niels and Seppo were 18. Yes, the age gap might raise a few eyebrows today, but this was 1960, and societal norms were a little different. In any case, their ages are the least controversial part of this story. The two girls were classmates at a vocational school, while the boys were apprentices at a local foundry. They had planned their camping trip to the Aukonsvika Peninsula, a scenic spot on the southern edge of Lake Bottom. For the teens, it was meant to be a carefree weekend of swimming, fishing, and just enjoying the great outdoors. After arriving at the campsite, they set up their tent and spent the afternoon relaxing by the lake. They swam in the cool water, cast their fishing lines, and soaked in the long daylight hours of a Nordic summer. The boys also enjoyed some vodka, because, well, it's Finland. As night fell, the group settled into their tent, ready for a good night's sleep under the stars. Or at least that's how it started. We know from Mailer's journal that the night didn't go entirely as planned. Her last entry reads, Fifth day camping at Lake Bottom. Seppo and Niels were drunk. Up at 2 a.m., Seppo was fishing. Seems the boys had trouble sleeping, so they decided to head back out to the lake for some late-night fishing. Imagine the scene. The water is glassy and still. The moon casts a soft glow over the landscape, and the only sounds are the quiet lapping of the water and the occasional rustle of leaves. For two teenage boys, it must have felt like a perfect moment of freedom. After a while, they returned to the tent, crawled back into their sleeping bags, and tried again to get some rest. By morning, the idyllic campsite had transformed into a scene of unimaginable horror. Around 11 a.m., a local man named Esko Johansson and his son made their way down to the lake for a morning swim. From a distance, they noticed the group's tent had collapsed. At first, they thought it may have just been a rough night or maybe a prank. As they got closer, they realized something was very, very wrong. The tent was torn and soaked with blood. Inside, the bodies of three teenagers lay motionless, while Gustafsson, the only survivor, was found outside, gravely injured and unconscious. The details were gruesome. Mela and Anya had been stabbed repeatedly, Mela suffering 15 stab wounds, some inflicted after her death. Seppo's injuries were equally brutal, with fatal wounds to his neck. Nils had suffered severe head trauma, including a fractured skull and a deep gash on his cheek, so wide that his teeth were visible. The scene was chaotic and horrifying, even from a distance. For Esko and his son, stumbling across this nightmare must have been absolutely traumatizing. They ran back to town as fast as they could to alert the authorities. When the police arrived, they were faced with a mystery unlike anything they'd seen before. Who could have committed such a violent and seemingly random act, and why? The killer or killers hadn't entered the tent in the usual way. Instead, they had cut the guy ropes, causing the tent to collapse and trapping the teens inside. Then they stabbed and bludgeoned their victims through the fabric. It was a cold, calculated attack carried out with shocking brutality. Adding to the mystery, several items were missing from the campsite, including wallets, clothing, and the keys to the teens' mopeds. Their murder weapons, a knife and a blunt object, possibly a rock, were also nowhere to be found. It quickly became clear that this was no ordinary crime. And as we'll see, the investigation that followed would raise more questions than it answered. Now, when it comes to crime scene investigations, preserving the area is one of the most critical steps. You've probably seen it in every crime show. The yellow police tape goes up, everyone keeps a distance, and investigators carefully collect every shred of evidence. Well, let me tell you, none of that happened at Lake Bottom. From the moment the authorities arrived, the crime scene became a complete circus. Police officers, soldiers, and search dogs, and even curious onlookers swarmed the area, trampling over potential evidence and making it nearly impossible to conduct a thorough investigation. The authorities didn't even bother to cordon off the area with police tape, which is, you know, basic crime scene 101. To make matters worse, in the days following the murders, unsuspecting campers who hadn't heard the news could have easily pitched their tents in the same spot. Imagine accidentally setting up camp on top of a murder site. Chilling, to say the least. Despite the chaos, investigators managed to recover a few key pieces of evidence. For starters, Gustafsson's shoes were found nearly 500 meters away from the campsite. Why they were so far away and how they got there remains one of the case's enduring mysteries. Additionally, a floating drink bottle was found in the lake near the campsite, and two fingerprints were lifted from it. At the time, fingerprint analysis was pretty basic, and the prints couldn't be matched to anyone in the immediate investigation. Whether the bottle was left by the killer or just by some random litterer remains a mystery. But perhaps the strangest discovery of all was a rolled-up pillowcase found near the tent. The fabric was stained with blood and semen, yet none of it could be definitively linked to the victims. The forensic technology of the 60s simply wasn't advanced enough to make sense of this perplexing clue, and even today, its significance is unclear. While the physical evidence painted a confusing and incomplete picture, there were a few eyewitness accounts that added new layers to this mystery. At around 6 a.m. on the morning of the murders, two young boys were out birdwatching near the lake. From a distance, they noticed the collapsed tent, but didn't think much of it at the time. What really caught their attention was a man walking away from the campsite. This man, described as being in his 20s with blonde hair and wearing black clothing, would later become a key figure in the investigation. Was he the killer, or just an innocent passerby who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time? Nils Gustafsson, the sole survivor, also provided a description of a blonde man. Under hypnosis, a common police technique at the time, he recalled seeing someone staring down at him through a hole in the tent during the attack. Then there was a fisherman who had been angling near the campsite that morning. He too reported seeing a blonde man walking along a path near the lake. Now, if you're like me, you're probably thinking, isn't everyone in Finland blonde? Well, not quite, but it's certainly common enough that it didn't narrow things down much. Still, the consistent descriptions of this mystery man gave investigators something to work with. Despite the promising leads, the investigation quickly ran into a series of roadblocks. Amateur crime scene severely limited what evidence could be used. The lack of modern forensic tools made it difficult to piece together what had happened. The police conducted an exhaustive search of the surrounding forest and lake, even enlisting the help of the Finnish army. But despite their efforts, the murder weapons, a knife and a rock, were never found. The same went for the missing wallets, clothing, and moped keys. It was as if the killer had vanished into thin air, taking key pieces of evidence with them. Investigators also set up road checkpoints and interviewed over 4,000 people in the weeks following the murders. Amazingly, this dragnet approach managed to capture 88 wanted criminals. Yes, 88 criminals just casually hiding out in the Finnish wilderness. I mean, who knew the woods near Helsinki were basically Finland's version of Alaskan bush territory for fugitives? But despite rounding up all these shady characters, none of them turned out to be the lake bottom killer. With no arrests and no solid evidence, this investigation shifted its focus to a handful of individuals who seemed suspicious for one reason or another. Over the years, several suspects emerged, each with their own bizarre backstory and unsettling connections to the case. And of course, apologies for butchering these names. Obviously, I'm not Finnish, so it's kind of difficult to even try to say these names. So with suspect number one, Pauli Kustaluoma, was a fugitive who had escaped from a labor facility shortly before the murders. On the morning after the crime, he approached a carpenter living in the woods and asked for a cigarette. The carpenter noticed that Luoma was covered in dust and had bloodstains on his arm and chest. Case closed, right? Not so fast. As it turns out, the blood on Luoma's clothing was his own, the result of
new year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Minor injuries he'd sustained during his escape. Also had an airtight alibi for the night of the murders, so while he was undoubtedly up to no good, he wasn't the lake bottom killer. Suspect number two. Next up was Pentti Soininen, a 15-year-old who had run away from the nearby care home around the time of the murders. As he grew older, his violent tendencies became more pronounced, and he was eventually diagnosed as a psychopath. Naturally, this caught the attention of investigators who questioned him about his whereabouts on the night of the murders. However, he was quickly ruled out as a suspect. He wasn't near the campsite that night, and there was no evidence linking him to the crime. Suspect number three. Now we're getting into the truly bizarre suspects. Valdemar Gielström, better known as Kiosk Man, owned a small kiosk near Lake Bottom and infamous in the local community for his aggressive behavior. He was a violent alcoholic with a particular hatred for campers. Seriously, this guy was like the grumpy old man in every horror movie. He warns the teenagers not to go into the woods. Except instead of just yelling at people, he took things to a whole new level. He was known to throw rocks at campers, cut the ropes on their tents, and even hide razor blades inside apples left out for unsuspecting hikers. So did Kiosk Man finally take his vendetta against campers too far? Many locals thought so, and Gielström quickly became a prime suspect. Police searched his property but found no evidence linking him to the murders. Years later, Gielström reportedly confessed to the crime multiple times, but his statements were dismissed as the ramblings of a troubled old man. In 1969, Gielström drowned himself in Lake Bottom, taking any secrets he might have had to the grave. Suspect number four. And finally, we have the most infamous suspect of all, Hans Osman. Yes, that's his... Excuse me. Hans Assmann. Yes, that's his real name, and yes, it's pronounced exactly how you think it is. Hans Assmann was a German expat living near Lake Bottom who had a shadowy and mysterious past. Some claimed he had been a guard at Auschwitz during World War II, while others believed he was a KGB spy operating in Finland during the Cold War. But what really made him a suspect was his behavior on June 6, 1960, one day after the murder. He turned up at Helsinki General Hospital wearing clothes that were reportedly covered in blood and dirt. Doctors also noted that his fingernails appeared to have dirt under them as if he had been digging. Despite fitting the description of the blonde man seen near the campsite, Assmann was never charged. The police claim he had an alibi, though the details of it were vague at best. Hans Assmann's presence in the case is like something straight out of a Cold War spy thriller. There are so many layers to this story that it's almost hard to believe the guy was real. Let's start with the infamous hospital visit on June 6, 1960, just one day after the murders. Assmann arrived at Helsinki General Hospital behaving erratically. He was reportedly wearing clothes that were stained with what looked like blood, and he had dirt under his fingernails. The doctors who treated him noted his bizarre behavior. He pretended to fall unconscious, lashed out verbally at staff, and refused to cooperate. One of the doctors immediately suspected that Assmann might be connected to the Lake Bottom murders, which were all over the news by then. Dr. Jorma Apollo called the police to report his suspicions, but shockingly, the authorities didn't seem particularly interested. They didn't even bother to confiscate Assmann's blood-stained clothing, which could have been crucial evidence. When questioned by police, Assmann claimed that the stains on his clothes were from paint, not blood. The police apparently took his word for it and didn't conduct any tests. As for the dirt under his fingernails, that detail was simply overlooked. Why did the police dismiss Assmann as a suspect so quickly? The answer lies in his alibi, or more accurately, the so-called rock-solid alibi the authorities claimed he had. At first, the details of his alibi were kept under wraps, with police citing sensitive circumstances. Years later, court documents revealed what those circumstances were. Assmann had been in Helsinki with his mistress on the night of the murders. Her landlord corroborated this story, claiming he had seen the couple having breakfast together the next morning. However, this alibi wasn't as airtight as it seemed. For one, it was based entirely on the testimony of the mistress and her landlord. Two, people who had obvious reasons to protect Assmann. Moreover, there were inconsistencies in the timeline that suggested Assmann could have slipped away during the night to commit murders. To make matters worse, the police didn't seem to investigate his alibi too thoroughly. It's almost as if they were eager to clear him from suspicion and move on. Now here's where things take a turn into a full-blown conspiracy territory. Over the years, rumors persisted that Hans Assmann was a KGB agent. The theory goes like this. During World War II, Assmann served in the German Air Force, captured by Soviet forces in 1943, and spent the remainder of the war in a Soviet POW camp. According to some accounts, it was during this time that Assmann was recruited by the KGB, Soviet Union's notorious intelligence agency. After the war, Assmann moves to Finland, a neutral country that was geographically and politically situated right on the edge of the Iron Curtain. This made it an ideal base of operations for Soviet spies. Assmann married a Finnish woman, Vienno, who herself was rumored to be involved in espionage. He frequently traveled under false names, adding fuel to the fire. If Assmann really was a KGB agent, it could explain why the Finnish police were so quick to dismiss him as a suspect. The Cold War was in full swing, and Finland was trying to maintain a delicate balance between its Western allies and its powerful neighbor to the east. Accusing a potential Soviet operative of murder could have had serious diplomatic consequences. It's an outlandish theory, sure, but it's not entirely outside the realm of possibility. After all, by the 80s, it was estimated that the Soviet Union had over 200 active spies operating in Finland. Could Assmann have been one of them? And if so, did his connections to the KGB allow him to evade justice? Adding to the eerie mystery surrounding Hans Assmann is a photograph that surfaced in the early 2000s. The photo was taken at the joint funeral for the Lake Bottom murder victims. And among the crowd of murders, there's a man with sharp cheekbones, slick back blonde hair, and a chiseled jawline. Many believe this man is Hans Assmann. If true, it raises an unsettling question. Why would Assman attend the funeral of three teenagers he had no apparent connection to? Was it out of some twisted sense of guilt or arrogance? Or was it just a coincidence and a case of mistaken identity? The image remains one of the most haunting pieces of the Lake Bottom puzzle, a chilling reminder of just how strange and inexplicable this case truly is. Now, let's fast forward to 2004, more than four decades after the murders. By this point, the Lake Bottom case had gone cold. Most people assumed it would remain unsolved forever. That's why it came as a shock when police arrested Niels Gustafsson, the sole survivor of the attack, and charged him with the murders. The arrest was based on new forensic evidence that hadn't been available in 1960. Specifically, investigators re-examined Gustafsson's shoes, which had been found 500 meters away from the campsite. Modern testing revealed that the shoes were covered in the blood of the other three victims. But curiously, there were no traces of Gustafsson's own blood. Prosecution argued that this proved he was the killer. According to their theory, he had attacked his friends in a drunken rage, discarded his shoes to hide evidence, and then inflicted injuries on himself to make it look like he had been attacked. The defense had a different story to tell. Gustafsson's trial began in 2005, and it quickly became one of the most sensational legal cases in Finnish history. Prosecution painted him as a jealous and rage-filled young man who had snapped under the influence of alcohol. They argued that Gustafsson had made unwanted advances towards Ayla Bjorklund, his girlfriend, and that when she rejected him, he became violent. A fight broke out between Gustafsson and Boysman, the other male camper, during which Gustafsson sustained his injuries. After killing all three of his friends, Gustafsson allegedly staged the scene to look like an external attack. The defense poked holes in this narrative. First, they pointed out the severity of Gustafsson's injuries, which included a fractured jaw, cracked skull, and cerebral fluid leaking from his nose. Medical experts testified that these injuries were far too severe to have been self-inflicted. They also highlighted the absence of blood on Gustafsson's clothing. If he had carried out such a violent attack, it would have been nearly impossible for him to avoid getting blood on himself. Finally, the defense noted that the description of the blonde man seen near the campsite didn't match Gustafsson. Witnesses, including bird watchers and the fishermen, were adamant that the man they saw was not Gustafsson. After a lengthy trial, the court found Niels Gustafsson not guilty of the murders. The jury concluded that there was insufficient evidence to convict him, and he was acquitted of all charges. He later received £45,000 in compensation for his time in custody, though he argued that the amount was far too low given the damage to his reputation. Despite Gustafsson's acquittal, the Lake Bottom murders remain unsolved. Over the years, countless theories have emerged, but none have provided definitive answers. Was it the kiosk man? Was it Hans Assman, the enigmatic German with possible ties to the KGB? Or was it someone else entirely, an unknown killer who managed to slip away undetected? The Lake Bottom murders have left an indelible mark on Finnish history, capturing the public's imagination and haunting the collective psyche for over 60 years. It's a case that raises more questions than answers, a puzzle that may never be fully solved. For now, all we can do is speculate and wonder, who was the killer at Lake Bottom? And will we ever know the truth? Let me know your thoughts in the comments section below. Do you have any other theories? Do you think it was one of the three suspects we mentioned? And let me know who you thought is responsible, and do you think this case will ever be solved? Of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, be able to pay them, and eventually take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.